This is Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Presented by Fasig Tipton.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Saver wins the Derby for Todd Pletcher.
The result will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And dialed in, never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to a special Breeders' Cup edition of the show Trainers Listen to, Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you once again. And as always, you're listening to the show live throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, or you're tuned in to our free live streaming or the archived podcast of the show. And you're doing that, of course, on our HRRN website, horseracingradio.net. Well, each week, I typically invite one trainer on this show for a full hour, and I really enjoy taking them on a trip down memory lane, looking back on some of the top horses and the greatest memories that they have, and even getting the chance to go back and talk about the very beginning, how each of them got started in racing and became interested in our great sport. Well, with the 37th Breeders' Cup now only about 40 hours away, I thought it would be fun to do something a bit different on today's show. Hall of Fame trainers Steve Asmussen and Bill Mott, along with future Hall of Famer Chad Brown, have accounted for a combined 32 Breeders' Cup wins. How about that? They all come into this year's renewal with several opportunities to add to those totals. And over the past week or so, each of them have taken the time to visit with the Big A and Bobby Newman on our race day show, which you can catch every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 Eastern here on HRRN. Well, all three trainers discussed each of the Breeders' Cup entrants, which they're going to saddle coming up on Friday and Saturday. And you're going to hear all of those and all of that conversation coming up over the next hour here on Trainer Talk. We begin with Hall of Famer Bill Mott.
Nice enough to join us now, Hall of Famer Bill Mott. 10 Breeders' Cup wins already in his career. And, of course, you just heard the unconquerable, invincible, unbeatable Cigar. Bill, 25 years since Cigar capped off that perfect season in the Classic. Hard to believe it's been that long.
Yeah, time flies when you're having fun, Anthony. It's been that was a good time, and we've had 25 good years since then. So, you know, but it's always fun to look back on those kind of horses. I mean, they're just he was probably sort of that once-in-a-lifetime kind of horse, I guess, and he was certainly very special.
It was a different event back then. It's hard to believe that was just the 12th Breeders' Cup. It was just the 7 races on one day, and, of course, all eyes were kind of on him. We don't really have that this year. When, you know, put yourself back 25 years ago, did you feel like it was that way, like you guys had the X on your back? Did you feel like all the attention was on you? And what kind of – what's that like?
Yeah, well, I guess the fact that he was undefeated going into the race, you know what I mean? I guess in the pressure is something you put on yourself, I guess. It's not necessarily something that somebody else does to you, but you feel it just because you want to keep it – you want to keep the streak going, and in his case, I mean, he had done everything we'd ever asked him to do, that would have been the 10th race that year and the 12th or 13th consecutive race, I guess, maybe the 12th, it rained the night before. It poured down. We had a muddy track, and that was something we had never done. You know, we actually had run in all those races, and everything had always been on a fast racetrack. So, I didn't know what was going to happen with the mud. And we woke up that morning, and our shed row was flooded, and the streets were flooded, and you know, it looked like kind of a miserable day for a Breeders' Cup. But, you know, as the day went on, the rain stopped and the water subsided, and we did have a sloppy racetrack or an off racetrack. But he, as it turned out, he handled it well. I mean, he met every challenge, you know, that we threw at him.
You think about that race a lot? Do you watch that replay often?
Well, you know, every once in a while, I mean, because it was one of Tom Durkin's great calls and one of the great races, you know, they'll show the stretch run of that race every now and then. I mean, you'll see it pop up on different stations. And of course, being in the business, somebody will always ask who is the best horse you ever trained. And of course, you know, Cigar naturally has to come in mind when those questions arise. And when you think about the best horses you've had or the best races, and, you know, a race like the Breeders' Cup Classic will certainly pop into your mind at that point.
It's funny when I look back at this, at the Breeders' Cup record, the first five Breeders' Cup winners you trained were for either Alan Paulson or Madeline Paulson. I think a lot of people forget that Chigar was actually in Madeline Silks when the streak started and then went over to Alan Silks for what is now the Cigar Mile. And the first win coming back with Theatrical back in 1987. It's amazing how, like you said, a good 25 years since, I can't imagine there's too many guys, maybe Richard Mandela, that, you know, just a fourth year of the event, have a win in the event, and now come, here it is, 33 years later, and you still have five or six horses pointed towards the World Championships.
Yeah, we hope, Anthony, that we're like fine wine. We hope we get better with age. it's been a good run, and you know, we're very lucky to still have horses running at the top level, and you know, being able to compete in those types of races. And you know, going into it this year, we don't have a Cigar. I mean, we don't have a horse that, you know, I'm not sure what the morning line odds are going to be on our group. We probably don't have anything that's going to be less than 10-1, but we're still in there swinging and feel like, you know, we're delighted to have the opportunity to be in there and have a chance. You know, not every horse has to be the favorite, I guess, to win. So, you know, we're in there giving our best.
All right, let's run through the six horses you have pre-entered. We're conducting this interview on Friday before the entries are taken on Monday. Frank's Rockette, a lot of questions as to whether she's going to try the girls going to 7 or take on the boys at 6. Have you made a decision yet?
Well, I'm definitely leaning toward the 6-furlong race against the boys. I think that's what I'm, you know, that unless something happens, you know, between now and then, that would lead us to believe we're better off in the other race. But we like that race, number one, because of the distance. That's probably the biggest reason. I mean, maybe we feel like maybe she's a little better at 6 than she would be at 7.
You've trained some superstars, obviously, Hall of Famers. I don't know if you've had any horse more consistent than her, never out of the exacta in 10 starts.
Right. No, she's been very good. I mean, I think we've placed her well during the course of the year. Mr. Fletcher, Frank Fletcher, is, you know, he's wanted us to run her in races that, you know, she would have a chance in. And of course, we're stepping up, you know, coming into the Breeders' Cup, and especially running against the boys. Naturally, this will be the toughest test of her career, but you know, she's always shown up, and we feel like, you know, if we can get her to, you know, win or a good placing, I mean, I think everybody's going to be pleased.
Harvey's Little Goyle cross-entered in the Distaff and the Filly and Mare Turf. I think a few people, including myself, were surprised to see her cross-entered in the Distaff, but I'm assuming she's going to stay the course and try the turf.
Yeah, probably leaning in that direction, you know. Not sure what Swiss Skydiver is going to do, if she's going to go in the Classic or she'll go in the Distaff. I mean, I think if you know, Monomoy Girl and Swiss Skydiver both go in the distaff and in the dirt. That makes it a pretty competitive race, and we're coming out of a grade one win in the Queen Elizabeth, and a 3-year-old filly. We know we're asking a lot, but she's doing well, and you know, this will probably be the last race for the year for her, you know, and she'll get a brief vacation after that. So I think we're excited about giving her one more chance before we put her away for the year. She's doing well. I think she's progressed well as the year has gone on. And it's not unheard of that a 3-year-old filly can compete at this time of year.
You mentioned that it was asking a lot of her. The fact that it's on 3/6, does it make it a little more palpable?
Well, I think she's good with the distance. You know what I mean? I think if it was a 1 3/8, I'd be skeptical. But I think between 9 and 10 furlongs is actually a good distance for her. She ran good at 9 furlongs last time. She finished well in the Alabama on the dirt, going 1 1/4. So I'm not afraid of the distance, you know, at all.
Casa Creed pre-entered in the mile. You won it with Tourist a few years back. He still needs a little help to get in. Is he? You're pointing him for the race, even though he's on the AEs. Is he going to run if he gets in?
Yeah, yes, we are. He'll breeze tomorrow at Churchill, and then come on over to Keeneland. He's been doing fine. He's run well. We're excited about getting him in the race. I mean, that's going to be a big challenge, even, you know, before they open the starting gate. But there's a couple horses in there that are pre-entered in other spots that look like, you know, so we're going to need one defection, I guess, before we can get in, but we'll be ready to go if that happens.
All right. The last three races on the card are three races you have won multiple times in your career, led by the distaff. Horologist, who was sensational in the Beldame last time out off a very weird trip. 5 distaffs in your career. Asina, Agena, Royal Delta 2 times, Unrivaled Bell. I had to look up Unrivaled Bell. I was very upset with myself. I wrote the other 9 winners down. I couldn't remember Unrivaled Bell. Horologist, I think she had the moniker of being a Monmouth Park horse. She certainly smashed that in her last 2 races.
Yeah, I mean, she's a filly that we got, you know, we were lucky enough to receive her in the middle of the year. She had thrown a stinker out in California, and they sent her east, and of course we did send her back for her first race. We sent her back to her stomping grounds, which I think she's 5 for 5 at Monmouth Park. And she won the Molly Pitcher, looked, you know, ran a very good race, ran a credible race when we sent her over to the La Troye Inn at Churchill. Monomoy Girl kind of stomped us that day. But then we came back and we ran a really good race the other day. I don't know if it was, if it was as good as it looked, but it appeared to be a good race. She looked strong finishing up the way the filly's doing, I mean, she is really doing quite well at the moment. I mean, she seems strong and training well. She breezed well before we brought her down to Kentucky. We'll have another breeze here on Sunday. But I'm very pleased with her. I couldn't, you know, she seems like she's handling everything very well. And it's a big challenge to beat. If Swiss Skydiver goes in there, and you know she's a good filly, and of course, you know, I know Monomoy Girl has been pointing for this since her last win, so I'm sure she's going to be, you know, tough to deal with. But our filly, I believe, I just feel like she's on the improve.
Channel Maker waves the Mott flag in the turf, talking about aging like a fine wine. 2 really nice efforts on the front end as a six-year-old now, grade ones back-to-back, just took his second Joe Hirsch Turf Classic in his career. He's really seemed to flourish when you and now his rider Manny Franco are aggressive with him in the early running.
Yeah, you know, and the setup of the race has helped him, but also the ground, the fact that we've got some, you know, two racetracks, he's had some given the ground. He likes the soft going. I think, being the fall of the year in Kentucky, I think the ground won't be rock hard anyway. I don't know, you know, the way the weather forecast looks will probably, you know, we could have firm turf, but I don't believe it'll be firm like you see in July and August, you know, when it's baked hard. I think it'll be any moisture that's in there is going to still, you know, leave some give in the ground, which should be a benefit to him. So we've got, you know, the pace scenario is always important to him and the condition of the ground. But, you know, he's a good horse when he shows up. I mean, and when the situation is right and it works out for him, I mean, he's tough and he's doing well. He's come out of his races good. He seems to be doing good in the fall of the year, and hopefully he's ready for another big one.
You're just going to let him roll early like you have in his last two?
Well, we got to, you know, look at the makeup of the race, I guess, before, you know, we'll see what who's running, who's not running, and what the pace scenario looks like. But he has been very good when he's up close.
Talking with Hall of Famer Bill Mott. Finally, Tacitus, looking to give you your third Breeders' Cup Classic win. Of course, Cigar back in 1995, Drosselmeyer in 2011. He's always had the feel, Bill, that he's got one of these grade ones in him. One of these races has his name on it. Is it the Breeders' Cup Classic?
Well, you know, things are going to have to work out for him. I mean, I think, you know, everybody was disappointed in his last race. He was the favorite, and we wound up third. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't an embarrassment, but we had, you know, we were beaten, I guess, a length for the whole thing, it looked like. With the early fractions, the way they were, he was on the front end. It looked like he had no reason to give up the win, but, you know, he, surprisingly enough, I mean, they went by him, you know, inside the eighth pole. Frankly, I mean, I think I was disappointed that he didn't win. He'll have to run better than that to win the Breeders' Cup Classic. But I think he can run better than that. I'm just, as you've already stated, I think there's a little better race in him. Maybe a different pace scenario is going to probably help him out a little bit. And, you know, maybe the bigger field actually could possibly be to his benefit. So, you know, we haven't given up on him. I mean, he's doing good. It was, you know, my choice to run or not run and bring him over here. And I think, to me, it's a no-brainer. You know, as long as he's doing well and healthy, we've got to give him the opportunity. I mean, we know he gets the trip. We know he gets the mile and a quarter, and we know he's, you know, he's certainly run against good horses before and run well. So we've got to give him a chance.
Well, I can tell you this: if Casa Creed gets in, you'll be in the last five races on Breeders' Cup Saturday. I'll make more money than you if they all win.
Okay. Well, I hope so. I hope that's the case.
Thanks for the time today, Bill. Appreciate it as always. Best of luck next weekend. Five or six, head on over for Hall of Famer Bill Mott in Breeders' Cup 37. Thanks, Bill. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Fantastic stuff from Hall of Famer Bill Mott. If that doesn't get you ready for the Breeders' Cup, nothing will, except for maybe our next interview with Steve Asmussen and then Chad Brown coming up in the second half of the program. Thinking about Bill Mott for a minute, I know he spent time with Anthony looking back on Cigar and that 1995 Breeders' Cup Classic. Hard to believe that it's been all those years since Cigar captured that race. You look at his first Breeders' Cup win, came in 1987 with Theatrical, who took the Breeders' Cup Turf that year. His most recent was in 2016 with Tourist. And I loved when Bill talked about the fact that he's still here. All those years since Theatrical, since Cigar, for example, since Agena, another one of his Breeders' Cup winners, Escena. He's had so many Frays in 1992. He's still here. He's still competing at a very high level and still doing his thing, and you got to love that about Hall of Famer Bill Mott. You also got to love the way that Steve Asmussen approaches his business and all of his Breeders' Cup contenders coming up on Friday and Saturday. He took time to visit with Anthony and Bobby earlier this week.
Of course, last year, Mottoli getting the job done in the Breeders' Cup. This sprint must bring back great memories.
Oh, very much so. You know, Mottoli had a tremendous year in 2019 for the Heidelbros. You know, what an unbelievably impressive horse and pleasure to run.
He gets that Breeders' Cup win. He goes off the stud. You pick up right where he left off with Volatile. And unfortunately, Volatile, late summer, early fall, forced to retire. Must be nice to have a horse like Yopan to look down the shed and call his number. Man, he has been fantastic in his first four starts of his career.
We're very fortunate, you know, extremely blessed to be given the opportunity with multiple talented horses. As you mentioned, extremely unfortunate that Volatile is off to stud, but feel very comfortable with his grade one win in the Vanderbilt, as well as his run in the Eustites that he showed what a brilliant horse he is, and he'll get a very good chance at stud at Three Chimneys. You know, I don't believe, you know, that there's any replacing a horse like Mottoli or Volatile, because who they are as individuals is what makes them so special. With that being said, you know, Volatile or Yaupan being 4-for-4, very talented, fast horse, 3-year-old tackling the Breeders' Cup this year. Tall task, but a horse with a great mind and plenty of physical talent.
You ran him against older horses in the first two starts of his career. Got the job done in the maiden race by a nose. And then when he went to Saratoga, under the gun from the rail, that was a really big effort. When did you know he was going to be a good one? I mean, he is really, really fast.
That's kind of a funny question. It was asked of me previously. When did I know? When Hobie Kite worked him in 20 and 20.3 at the 2-year-old in training sale at Gulfstream, he showed that he's better than just average. You know, just a completely brilliant horse. You mentioned how fortunate we are to have horses of this kind of ability brought into our care. And the Heidelbros purchased him and gave him plenty of time. And as you mentioned, he ran against older horses, his first two races being, you know, three and up maiden race at Churchill late summer, with kind of the delay to racing the pandemic this year caused. And then I thought we were honestly surprised he didn't win easier the first time with what he had shown training. But I think a lot of that is just his attitude and how laid back he is. And as if you've seen in his three subsequent races, we've been a lot more aggressive with him as far as how he's been ridden. And he has responded accordingly.
Yeah, talking with Hall of Famer Steve Asmussen, he's got the 3-year-old Yopan. And finally, it's very rare that you go to the grade one winner last. But Echo Town won the Allen Jerkins, third in his trial at Keeneland last time in the Grade 2 Phoenix, his first against older horses. Is he going forward as well?
Yes, you know, you mentioned the Grade 1 winner at last, and it is. Well, you know, we're all, you know, shiny objects, and the undefeated Yaupan and the undefeated Nashville are easy to talk to because they haven't done anything wrong. But with that being said, Echo Town is more than battle-tested. I thought he ran a solid race in the Phoenix. We have went to training him with blinkers since then. I thought it was just a, you know, kind of an odd race if you take it in snapshots. Eighth of a mile away from the gates, he's probably half a length off the lead. They call him 7 lengths back at the 3/8, and he gets beat 2.5. So I think that if we can get a little better run with him in the middle of a race, he can compete with any sprinter in the world.
And he's going to get the blinkers for the Breeders' Cup, Steve?
And that is, yes, that is where I were training him now and what I am expecting. And I do like how he worked very well this past Sunday with blinkers on.
Steve, you've also got some major players on Future Stars Friday Breeders' Cup, both in the Phillies and the Colts. And speaking of undefeated runners, Jackie's Warrior, 4-for-4 coming out of that monstrous win in the Champaign, figures to be the shortest price of the day on Breeders' Cup Friday. How did he come out of the race, and how do you think he'll handle two turns for the first time?
Well, that's a great question. What a tremendous horse. We watched his Saratoga special and his hopeful. Couldn't have been any more impressive, I thought, until I watched his Champaign. Everybody's curious. We're familiar with his pedigree. McLean's Music out of an AP 500 mare that was a multiple winner, but usually at a sprint distance. But I love how he, he's got a high cruising speed. Joel's got a tremendous amount of confidence in him. And the way he accelerated from the head of the stretch to the wire in the Champaign was extremely impressive. You did mention no two-turn races in him yet, but he does walk into the Breeders' Cup Juvenile with a Saratoga Special, Hopeful, and Champaign trophy in tow.
And then also on the Friday card, you've got two really nice fillies pointing toward the Juvenile fillies, Thoughtfully coming out of the run in the Alcibiades, Lady Lily coming off a nice win against Allowance Competition, both those races at Keeneland. How are those fillies coming up to the race?
Well, you mentioned Thoughtfully. I was actually, pretty disappointed in the Alcibiades opening day of the meet. Shipped down, just got here. Don't think she ran a race, from the inside. I think she's benefited from being able to stay at Keeneland, settle in, and train here. She also had a very good work on Sunday and expect her to do more of the same. She's absolutely stunning filly physically, and I think capable of a much better run than we got from her in the Alcibiades. As far as Lady Lily goes, ran a very nice allowance race, very determined win, but most likely going to bypass the juvenile fillies and wait for a later race. I think she'd benefit greatly from us spacing her races a little better.
All right, talking with Hall of Famer Steve Asmussen. How's my favorite Midwestern rider, Keith, doing?
He's being a great student at the University of Texas. But what a special time that was to have the opportunity to leg my son up on a few winners this summer. But he is back in school at the University of Texas and doing extremely well.
We have one more to ask you about. Bobby, I can't remember the horse's name. Yesterday afternoon, you unleashed, was it Silver State?
He ran a very nice horse for the Winchell Thoroughbreds and the Hortons. Obviously, we felt he was of Derby caliber this spring. Great big horse, absolutely gorgeous individual. And some time off after a disappointing Louisiana Derby, and he came back and ran lights out yesterday and looked special.
What are you going to do with him? You thinking about a race like the Malibu or the Cigar Mile?
Well, I think with him having some conditions, coming off of a nice long break, being in as great a shape as he is right now, I think we need to look towards 2021, expecting purses to get back to some spoiled levels at Oaklawn and some of those places. I think that's what we should target with him.
Always thinking. You don't win thousands of races without thinking. Steve, thanks for some time today. As always, we'll talk to you soon. Best of luck at the Breeders' Cup.
All right, I appreciate it, and happy handicapping.
Well, it's easy to see when you listen to Steve Asmussen talk about Breeders' Cup and talk about winning big races why only Dale Baird stands in front of him historically as the trainer to saddle the most winners in our sport. Steve now with more than 9,000 victories to his credit and looking to add to that total coming up Friday and Saturday at Keeneland. And my thanks to Steve and to Bill Mott for taking time to join Anthony and Bobby earlier this week. Second half of the show, you'll hear from, the man who has been the dominant trainer in our sport for the past several years, that is trainer Chad Brown, as he talks about all of his Breeders' Cup contenders on Friday and Saturday. That's next, right here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton.
This is Windstar Week on HRRN, celebrating the horses of Windstar Farm.
On Sunday, November 8th, after the Breeders' Cup, Fasig Tipton will offer a catalog of exceptional quality all in one spectacular session. A night of stars featuring champions, Breeders' Cup winners, classic winners, leading race fillies, world-class broodmares, and selected weanlings. Nearly 50 graded stakes winners and producers catalog, no less than 26 of which are Grade 1. The world's premier breeding stock event, the November Sale, November 8th in Lexington, Kentucky. With online bidding available, where will you be?
Consistently versatile, with 19 Grade 1 winners on every surface, from 6 furlongs to 1.25 miles, all over the world. 3 new Grade 1 winners in 2020.
Echo Town wins the Allen Turkey Stakes.
And Lady Spike Spear has gone on to win the Natalba by 3/4, Alda.
All purpose, all places, all power, Spikestown.
Standing at Windstar Farm.
In 1993, Dr. John West showed that EIPH occurs during exercise when blood vessels in the lungs rupture. This is due to stress caused by high blood pressure on the inside of the vessels and strong suction forces on the outside. Only flare strips and Lasix, used together or alone, have been clinically proven to reduce EIPH. Lasix works by reducing the high internal pressures, and flare strips work by reducing the suction forces on the outside. See the science at flarestrips.com.
Recognized for raising and selling racehorses, Millridge has raised or sold 8 Breeders' Cup winners since 2000, including Oscar Performance. Now in his third year at stud at Millridge, covering 118 mares in his first year and 116 in his second. Since 2000, Millridge has raised or sold 35 Grade 1 winners and associates with leading breeders. Included in this year's Keeneland November sale are broodmare offerings from Judmont Farms and leading breeder George Strawbridge, all selling without reserve. Millridge, raising and selling racehorses.
There's a corner of Kentucky in Bourbon County, which some refer to as the Promised Land. There's something in the soil and water that make it something special. So special that some of the world's greatest horsemen have staked their claim in the soil just outside of Paris. Iconic names such as Claiborne, Coolmore, Stone, and Darley grace the fence lines which have housed champions for generations. The name Alapa shines as a tribute to the Gilded Age, sharing the stature and grandeur of its neighbors. Born from the wealth, passion, and imagination of Edward Sims, no expense was spared to fulfill his vision. Sims was in the same league as John Madden and Arthur B. Hancock Sr. as a commercial breeder. The torch has been passed. Welcome to Hill and Dale at Alapa.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Stephanie's Kitten, who moves against the rail, 7 lengths off the lead, but Secret Gesture still the leader from Photo Call top of the stretch with Sentiero Italia third. Now Legatissimo is changing lanes, has to go to the outside. Here comes Sentiero Italia as well. Stephanie's Kitten is still fifth. Here's Photo Call right alongside of Secret Gesture. Stephanie's Kitten runs late toward the inside and finds an opening there. And Legatissimo on the outside, but Stephanie's Kitten bursting through an opening to the lead from Legatissimo. Stephanie's Kitten and Rod Ortiz Jr. for America in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Turf. Legatissimo was second across the line in 1:56 1/5 seconds.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch. That was Kurt Becker with the call of the Filly and Mare Turf in 2015, the last time, the only other time the Breeders' Cup has been held in Lexington, Kentucky at Keeneland Racecourse. And Stephanie's Kitten winning the Filly and Mare Turf for champion trainer Chad Brown, who's going to, well, you're going to hear from him coming up here in just a moment or two. Stephanie's Kitten, what a career that she wrapped up that day. 11 victories from 25 starts and earnings of more than $4.2 million for Ken and Sarah Ramsey. And she was special for sure. And Chad Brown winning 2 races on that Breeders' Cup at Keeneland in 2015. He's going to be look to add to that record coming up this year as well. Don't forget that if you missed any portion of this Trainer Talk show or any of our Trainer Talks, head over to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast at your leisure. If for some reason you missed tonight's show, the first half, that featured interviews with Bill Mott and Steve Asmussen talking about all of their Breeders' Cup horses this year. Just head back to our website and listen to that too. And again, it comes your way at horseracingradio.net. And follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, as we bring you all the Breeders' Cup coverage you can handle throughout the week. Our Breeders' Cup Countdown Show comes up tomorrow. Make sure you're joined. Join Bobby Newman and Jude Feld for that coming up from 8 to 10 tomorrow here on the network. Visit our website to check out the SiriusXM channel information and affiliates for the Breeders' Cup Countdown Show. All right, without further ado, it is Chad Brown talking about every Breeders' Cup horse he will saddle Friday and Saturday.
Chad, 15 wins already in the Breeders' Cup, $19.3 million, second to only Wayne Lucas, the Hall of Famer in wins, fifth on the all-time money list. When you're growing up in upstate New York outside Saratoga, can you ever imagine having this kind of success on some of racing's biggest days?
Well, you know, you aim out to do this, and you hope you get there. And, you know, over time, fortunately, I've had the right horses and the right people working with me and the right owners. So it's, you know, it's come together nicely over, you know, the past decade or so, and a little over that now. And, you know, we've just been really fortunate to have the right horses to show up in Breeders' Cup Day.
Yeah, short amount of time as well. You mentioned just over a decade. Take us back to the first one, Marum, in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies turf.
Yeah, it was a, you know, first year of training, and that filly was the first year they had the Juvenile Fillies turf. And, she broke her mane up at Saratoga. We didn't have many two-year-olds really to work with. She's the best with what we had to work with, and fortunately this filly turned out to be a star, and she was a really nice horse, and helped us get started, and unfortunately she was able to get her nose on the wire first.
From 2008 with Marum to last year, a three-win championship weekend capped off by a Horse of the Year performance by Bricks of Mortar. We just heard that. Still got to bring chills, huh, that stretch duel and him getting that mile and a half for the first time.
Yeah, it was a nervous couple of weeks for us. never been that far and having to do it off a bit of a layoff, you know, since you're only 2 million, so just sort of got him ready for the race, crossed my fingers, and you know, let him come out the gates and see what happened. And I mean, he really ran a remarkable race, even steadied a bunch early in the race, and fortunately it didn't take too much out of him. It really shows what type of determination the horse had to win to really overcome all that and still get the mile and a half, and, you know, just a horse of a lifetime, like you said.
Yeah. All right, so we go to this year, 13 pre-entries. You made 13 pre-entries on Wednesday. Let's run through them. Three on Friday. We'll start in the Juvenile Turf, a race you won with Structor last year. Public Sector comes in off a good race in the Pilgrim at Belmont Park.
Yeah, he really promising horse. Excuse me, we've really liked all the way along. He broke his maiden sharp at Saratoga, and he got caught in a paceless race last time in Belmont, and I think it really compromised him. I don't think he'll mind a cutback. If he gets a little pace in front of him, cutting back to a mile, he should be right there.
You mentioned the cutback. It happens with both of the juvenile races. Does it change your approach on the turf, I should say? Does it change your approach as to preparing these horses, not only for the preps, but then for the Breeders' Cup 4 or 5 weeks later?
You know, that's a great question. It depends on the horse is really the answer. You know, with this horse, it didn't really change anything we would have done. It's a little tricky. I mean, I like the race at a mile. The fact that the long maiden races at Saratoga are a mile and a 16th and the preps at Belmont a mile 16th is unfortunate that they still have them that way. But we still had a lot of success, you know, running in those races. So I can't say, you know, the distances that they are, the little short cutback has really affected us any. We've had success doing it. So it just depends on the horse. If, you know, we've brought horses in before that are stretching out. But most of the ones we bring back are doing a slight little cutback into the mile.
You mentioned the paceless race in the Pilgrim. Public Sector still able to run, bring a bang-up effort. Editor-at-Large came back in the Ms. Grillo. And again, not as little pace on as there was in the Pilgrim. But for her second start, she ran really well to finish third that day behind Plum Ellie, who's going to be one of the favorites in this race.
Yeah, she ran really well. And I think she's a work in progress. She just keeps getting better every breed. And her first, her two races are, I see a sequence of just building off the previous. I don't think she'll mind a little cutback either. This horse with a little pace in front of her. This race looks very competitive, and there's a couple fillies in there that are really in good form. Like you mentioned, one of them being Plum Alley. So she's going to need to really step up and close the gap on a couple of these fillies in there. And, of course, I'm sure there'll be some nice Euros and such. So I thought at the end of the day, though, it was worth entering her in the race. She really breathed nicely last weekend, and it caught my eye that she really could be coming in the race the right way. And, you know, I know that she's going to have to improve some, but I've had luck in this race running horses that are improving. You know, we've brought the favorites in some years and got it done, and other times just an improving horse, like you said about Maram. So, if you get that improvement, particularly in start 2 to 3 with a juvenile like this, you could really take a big jump. And that's what we're going to cross our fingers and hope for here.
Yeah, 5 for 12. There have been 12 runnings of this race. You won 5 of them. It's pretty remarkable. All right, let's turn our attention to the big one on Friday. They wrap Future Stars Friday with the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. You're going to see a familiar foe in Jackie's Warrior, who figures to be a pretty short favorite, a central quality. Brad Cox has the local win in the Claiborne Breeders' Futurity. You're going to bring reinvestment risk back to try Jackie's Warrior for a third time. What does he have to do? And obviously he's going to have to get a little faster, but I'm sure you and Klarovich are excited at the prospect of perhaps not having to do the dirty work behind Jackie's Warrior this time around.
Yeah, that's really going to be the key. Is obviously Jackie's Warrior is a super impressive horse and done a super job with him, and he the rest of the field's going to need him to not be on his best, I think, and maybe get pressured a bit and see what happens around two turns. He certainly has done nothing wrong. He's a scary horse to run against. You know, our horse at Saratoga ran two really, really good races, and I liked his race a lot in the hopeful. I thought he was running at that horse late, and I took him to Belmont, and although he trained well, he just didn't run the same in the race on that track. He just never looked good to me. You know, I felt we were in deep water, even on the turn. I read where they were really sitting well on him. He just, funny with his leads and such. I don't know that he cared for the track much. So I'm hoping a change out to Keeneland, and I'm hoping that track plays a little bit more like the new main track at Saratoga. You know, my experience training at Saratoga this year, the new track I thought was very nice. It's reminded me a little bit of Keeneland. So I'm hoping that proves to be true. And I've always been looking to get this horse around two turns. I think he'll be better. So we'll just see, and hopefully there's some good pace to run it.
Should get a better setup as well, right? Like you just mentioned, the pace setup. He's been having to do that dirty work, like we said earlier. Now it looks like he'll be able to sit a much better trip. Not a field of 14. I guess you don't worry too much about the post. But the two turns is something you've been looking forward to with this horse, yes?
Yeah, this distance. You know, I'm not going to say exactly how far he'll run, but I have no trouble believing he'll be effective at a mile on a 16th, on two turns. The way he moves, certainly bred for it. So, I don't think we'll have any trouble with that, just if he's good enough and if he gets to the right trip. And I'm hoping he draws a cozy post towards the inside. He can save ground in this race. And, he doesn't mind dirt in his face. He showed in his debut he can run inside of horses. He's a handy horse. He's not that big. I think he'll handle the turns well at Keeneland on that track. So, I'm really looking forward to the race and seeing if he could redeem himself and run more of the race I saw in the hopeful. And if he runs that type of race, I think he'll be competitive.
All right. We'll move on to Saturday. Front Run the Fed kicks things off in the turf sprint. He's a horse that around the one turn of those sprint distances, he's kind of been effective at all of these sprint distances.
Yeah, his one-turn record's impressive. And I know he's lightly raced, and, he's a very consistent horse around one turn, and he's never run this short, so that'll be a challenge. He handled the cutback at Kentucky Downs good, but, that's a different course as well. So on a flat 5.5 race, we'll have to see. I liked how Javier got him into the race, though, in that last race. He was never too far behind. going that short, which was nice to see. I feared maybe he'd fall too far back, but he didn't. And he was very responsive to lay closer to horse. And, you know, he's going to need to do that here because, as you know, in this turf sprint, you know, the gate opens, you blink, and it's over. So, there's no room for error in a really high-quality 5.5 furlong turf race.
So we're looking for a different trip than the one Bobby Skenton had when he won this for you a few years back.
I don't want to see him there. You're not gonna. I don't think you're gonna win at Keeneland if you're, you're dead last turning for home in this race this year. I don't see that.
That was one of the more remarkable races, Breeders' Cup or otherwise, I think I've ever seen. He was last off the hill, and he still got there that day.
Yeah, it was such an amazing run. The best last quarter, you know, I've ever had one of my horses run. And it's hard to imagine that he'd win from there. I agree. And, that was one of the more memorable wins in the Breeders' Cup we've had for sure.
Yeah, of course. Chad worked assistant trainer for the late, great Hall of Famer, Bobby Frankel. Bobby's getting named after Bobby and getting the job done in Santa Anita, apropos to say the least. Complexity figures to be the favorite in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. You mentioned Front Run the Fed around one turn. I don't know if there are too many horses more talented or better around one turn than Complexity, but now he has to deal with the two turns of this quirky Keeneland Mile that starts almost immediately on that clubhouse turn.
Yeah, as the horse has gotten older, I'm more comfortable with the horse running at a mile, seven to a mile, and I don't know that he'd be quite quick enough at six with some of these horses that are in this race in the sprint. So I decided not even to cross center him and just pick our race. And I know that his other two turn race in his life, the Juvenile, he didn't run very well. But you know, the horse came out of there with badly bucked shins, and he was very, very sore exiting in the race. And I have to believe going into the race, they were probably coming on and he just wasn't himself, and that along with the fact he's just older. I've had a lot of older horses be able to run further than when they were younger, you know, and turfing and dirt. And I'm confident this horse can do the same. He's a big, good-looking, good-moving horse that he can rate if needed. He's shown that. He won't be far away, and I don't mind if he's on the lead. So we'll just leave up those eggs.
A lot of versatility, and I'm going to take that. With that start, it's a unique kind of start right on that first turn. We'll see if Complexity can handle the two turns. He'll do it just for the second time in his career. Filly and Mare Turf, a race you've won a handful of times. You bring in a pretty strong hand here. You have the 2018 winner in Sister Charlie, who was third in the event last year. She's coming back for a third consecutive start. And then you have her little sister, my sister Nat, and Rushing Fall, pretty strong hand. Nay Lady Nay needs a little help to get in from the AE list. Talk about this trio of fantastic fillies and mares.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Rushing Fall appears to be one of the favorites, if not the favorite for the race, based on who I saw was, you know, scheduled to run. And she's got to get out to mile 316. But well, if you're just talking about the Complexity, you know, these horses get a bit older. I've had them run further, you know, several examples. You know, horses like Stephanie's Kitten, and they had the spot in this race alone. I mean, they were never mile and a quarter horses when they were younger. And I think Rushing Falls in that category. She's, as an older horse, she has much more range. And she's really a remarkable horse. I mean, to win grade ones, you know, 4 years in a row, it's just elite company. It's not too many horses that can have done that, not fillies particularly. And she's so versatile, too. I mean, when you go look at her races when she's younger, she's winning the Juvenile Fillies Turf from way off the pace, and she's won grade ones on the lead, and you know, she can get it done from anywhere, so she's pretty tactical that way. And you know, Sister Charlie, of course, a champion, and you know, really remarkable to run in the same race 3 years in a row. It's a real testament to her consistency and her durability. And you know, she's a great mare. And yeah, she got started later this year, and her first race was, you know, really rusty. I thought her second race was a little better than it looked. She really came on and galloped out well, and she's trained a lot better since that race than I've seen her all year. We know that she likes Keeneland, like Rushing Fall. They've both won grade ones there. and she'll appreciate the mile and 3/16 distance. I think it's a good trip for her. And, you know, her younger sister in the race is, we really weren't planning on this when you started the year, but she ran a really good race in the Flower Bowl, just missed. She took a while to acclimate a couple of years, really, and now she's in good form. And I had made a comment earlier in the year, I was going to keep her on three-turn races. I think that's what she wants to do. And now I see her actually circling back to some of her form from when she was younger, won a couple mile and an eighth races, you know, in Europe. I see her now picking the bit up stronger in the morning and showing a stronger turn of foot than she showed me when she first came over. So we're going to try to cut her back here, a little cut back off the Flower Bowl, and see if there's a lot of pace in the race that she can work out a cozy trip and maybe spring an upset. So we'll see.
All right. The Breeders' Cup Mile defending champ Uni is back. Kind of like Sister Charlie, took her a little time to get going this year, but a defending championship win in the First Lady over the course. She's shown an affinity, like Rushing Fall, to really like it at Keeneland. She's joined by a couple of colts, Digital Age and Raging Bull.
Yeah. I mean, Uni's a horse that started off like Sister Charlie, a bit rusty, and, you know, both of them 6-year-olds wondering, wow, maybe we should run this year. And you know, they don't want to run anymore, which can happen, especially with fillies. And she's really come back into form, and so nice to see her take down the First Lady again and really come to the Breeders' Cup the right way. So I think she's lined up for another move forward, and, you know, she's going to need to do it again. I mean, she ran the race of her life and the number of her life to win the Breeders' Cup last year. I think she's going to have to repeat that performance to win here.
Digital Age, he's another one. I think started off his career with a bang, kind of took him a while to find his way. But that effort last time out on a delayed Derby day, that was a heck of an effort.
Yeah, no, he's a horse that's really improved. He's always been a nice horse, and he's won some really good races. But I really saw him turn the corner and take the next step as an older horse in that race. Cutting him back further, he's gonna have to get in gear pretty early, not come too far out of it, but. He's training pretty sharp, and he's an improving horse, and he ran a lifetime new top in numbers last time. He's going to need to top it again here, and he's not far away from what number it would take to win, so we'll see.
And Raging Bull is always, he seems to be almost always capable of you leading him over there and just blowing the doors off any field, and certainly deserves a shot in this mile.
Yeah, he does. He's obviously pace dependent, and needs to work out crips from where he comes from. That's difficult with these closers like these three. But like you said, on his best day, his numbers are very fast, and he has blown the doors off some fields before and had some really impressive races. You know, he's just running grade ones, I don't know how many, 10 times in a row or something. I look at his form. I mean, he's really kept the strongest company maybe of any horse I'm running. Coming into the Breeders' Cup. So win or lose, you got to respect the fact he doesn't duck anybody, this horse. And, you know, he's going to need some pace, and he's going to work out a trip, and we'll see what the ground's like. And but I'll tell you, he looks good, and he's training really good. And again, like you say, he's the horse that's capable on any given day to run a race that's certainly good enough to win here. So hopefully it's that day.
And we know he can carry a lot of weight because I'm on him more often than not when you do lead him over there. So he's carried me to the winner's circle, plenty of times.
He does carry, ironically, that's another thing. He's carried a lot of weight since he's won the Hollywood Derby. So he was punished a little bit for winning that race. So he does carry a lot of weight, actually.
Yeah, no, believe me, I know. Which gets to the last but not least. I've lured you into almost 20 minutes just to get to my favorite filly in training, Dunbar Road. Last time in the Beldame, off the lay, it was more than the layoff last time, a little bit of the break from the summer. She had some corrective throat surgery. It just seemed like it was a weird race, the short field and everything. How has she come out of that race?
She came out well. I'll tell you, it was a real head-scratcher, and I know that's a poor excuse sometimes because it doesn't give you anything to really hang your hat on, but, you know, she trains at Belmont, and you'd think she'd like it. She's won stakes there before. She's won races there before. But for whatever reason, she's handled the track that day. And I talked about reinvestment risk. And you know, I think the track's fine at Belmont. I trained there. I just, for some reason in those races, they just, both jockeys came back, and particularly number of roads, that she just was struggling the whole way around there. And she went into the race training super, and she's come out and trained well. So I don't know, you know, what exactly it was. I mean, it was, the times were pretty slow. It was loose that week, and particularly by the time they ran that race, the track was really, really loose. I'm hoping that's it. I mean, we have had horses, particularly recently, that ran, you know, races that draw a line through, like Uni and the four-star Dave, and she came right back and ran a blinder in the race at Keeneland. So, unfortunately, for trainers and horse players alike, sometimes you got to draw lines through them. And the good news is there's nothing wrong with her. So she's going to have to really step up, though. And she's run at Keeneland before and liked the track, done well last year there. She ran a really good race in the Spinster. And, I mean, this is going to be a super strong race. And, you know, she's going to have to run a new top for her. She's training like she can. So we'll see. And, you know, we're going to give her an opportunity to do it because, like I said, she's very healthy right now. She looks great on the track.
All right. Well, we'll let you go. Chad, thanks as always. Best of luck. Chad Brown looking to add to his already legendary stats in the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Thanks, Chad. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's so hard to top Chad Brown, especially in recent years, in any big race, including the Breeders' Cup. And he's back in action, as you just heard, with several contenders in this year's two-day World Championships. Our coverage, by the way, comes your way Friday and Saturday. We are the exclusive radio network of the Breeders' Cup World Championships, and we've been that way since 2007. Very proud to be able to say that we brought you that coverage every year since 07. Our coverage on Friday kicks off at 2:30 Eastern Time, goes to 5:30, and at 5:30 we segue into a special 90-minute, that's an expanded Weekend Stakes Preview Show presented by Naira Betts, 5:30 to 7. Anthony Stabile and Bobby Newman will handicap all of the Saturday races for you. So it's a must-listen starting at 2:30 on Friday afternoon. 2:30 to 7, we'll have you covered. And then coming up on Saturday, we begin at noon Eastern time, and we'll take you all the way through the Breeders' Cup Classic, which is set to run somewhere around that 5:15 Eastern mark. We'll have all that coverage for you beginning at noon Eastern here on the network, so make sure you're locked in. And our full schedule available at horseracingradio.net. And by the way, on Saturday morning, I will have a special Breeders' Cup edition of the Equine Forum that features, among others, trainer Al Stahl Jr., who is going to talk about Tom's d'Etat going in the Breeders' Cup Classic. He's 6-1 on the morning line and certainly looks to be one of the major players in that race. And, you know, of course, how can you count out Bob Baffert and some of the top horses that are going to be in there from his barn, too? It should be a fun showdown. And I think Tis the Law could be getting overlooked. Just keep that in mind. He might be the forgotten horse in this year's Classic, the Belmont winner, the horse that many people were talking about being a Triple Crown winner this year. He might be getting overlooked, so keep that in mind as you start looking at your handicapping for the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Man, what a fun show this was. Something different. You heard from Bill Mott, you heard from Steve Asmussen, and you heard from Chad Brown. I think we got you covered pretty good on tonight's show. Good luck at the races, good luck handicapping, and good luck picking some winners at the Breeders' Cup. Hope you're locked into our coverage here on HRRN. Again, if you missed any portion of this show, any of those interviews, head over to horseracingradio.net and check out the podcast. For my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studios, I'm Mike Penna. We will talk to you later this week here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Thanks for listening.